Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, I'm Clive Anderson. Welcome to My Seven Wonders Live. In the My Seven Wonders podcast, I ask a special guest to select and talk about the seven wonders of his or her world. This episode is one of several we recorded in front of a live audience at the 2022 Edinburgh Festival Fringe. And the guest who joined me for this recording is a comedian and ventriloquist, best known for his character Chester Missing, a fictional political commentator who confronts racism and white privilege in post-apartheid South Africa. So here we are with an enthusiastic Edinburgh Fringe audience exploring the seven wonders of Konrad Koch.
Konrad. Hi. Okay. Well done.
Here we come all the way
from South Africa.
And I did.
I've just discovered from you, this is your first Edinburgh, your first visit to Edinburgh.
This is my first Edinburgh. It took a while to build towards doing it because I talk about politics. So I'm a white South African and I'm a ventriloquist. So you already have two reasons to think I'm a douchebag. And so it took a while to get here. And
nobody thinks ventriloquists are douchebags.
Oh, nobody. No. Bastards.
But you're a big star in South Africa.
Well, it's a bit weird, isn't it? My puppet is a big star in South Africa. I'm a well-known star, but my puppet's a very big star in that he interviews politicians. I've got a few characters, of course, being a ventriloquist. But my main character, who you'll meet today, interviews politicians on TV, which is, of course, bizarre, isn't it? A politician and puppet on the same show. Which one's the puppet, you know?
Yeah, who's being manipulated the most from behind?
Well, that's the South African story, you know, as apartheid ended. And then wealth kind of kept the system going because it was really an economic system. So it's an amazing metaphor. I mean, your own politics, you know, billionaires controlling things, Boris going, oh, what must I say? You know? So he talks like there's a hand in his bum.
I suppose he does now, whose hand though is it anyway?
That's what I want to know.
So how do you get going with this? I know you went to university and studied. Well, I've got two notes. You studied something like anthropology, social anthropology.
Yes, yes.
But then you went to a school of magic. But I don't know if that's a joke whether you did do
No, it. I did. We have a place in, it's a weird thing. This is like a Hogwarts, but it's a place in Cape Town called the College of Magic where you kind of learn just like tricks and juggling. Yeah. And it's like a weekend hobby type of thing.
Okay. Spelling, obviously.
Spelling, yeah. Yes. Well, it's, you know, it was like on Saturday mornings. Mm. And so instead of playing rugby, I went to one of those kind of rugby kind of schools, and instead of playing rugby, I played with dolls, so I got smacked a bit.
Okay.
and then learned ventriloquism there, but at university, you know, I started going to university sort of apartheid had ended. Yeah. Nelson Mandela was the president, and we had a thing called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission happening.
Yes, yeah.
You're right, but Desmond Tutu was heading that up.
Yeah.
And so the atrocities of apartheid, I know the sound, this is hectic for a comedy show. Yeah.
But this is all context. This is all good.
But I
just go back on that, the magic school. So you were learning ventriloquism. So that's how tough class for a teacher to control, isn't it? Because he comes and said, you got a bit of cheek, and you say, who said that? Well, nobody knows. It could be anybody.
I got a joke in my other show about must be weird having sex with a ventriloquist. Who's your daddy? Who said that? ventriloquism. Although, to be honest, at the beginning of ventriloquism class, everyone is clearly moving their lips. You're terrible for years. And because I've spent so much time on TV, I've got to remind myself, it's not TV. You must do ventriloquism now. Because he's on TV, my puppet's on it by itself, sort of spitting image style.
Right, so you're behind that. You can move
your lips.
You can't
see me. I can just talk, yeah, because our president's name is Ramaphosa. Try saying that without moving your lips. Ramaphosa.
I can't say it when I'm moving.
Ramaphosa. It's so complicated.
Okay, all right, so I don't know whether we should, I should, you know, just talk to you for a bit, but I'm interested to meet your
Chester Missing.
Yeah, he's called Chester Missing.
That's his name, because he doesn't know who he is.
And is he waiting patiently in
no,
there?
No, he's probably having a fight on Twitter.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of Twitter followers. It ended up in court once. We'll talk about that later.
Yes. Well. Yeah.
So, this is my friend, interviews politicians on TV, just lots of love. Ladies and gentlemen, Chester Missing!
Hello. Oh my, it's Clive Anderson. It's an honor, sir. Hello. I look like I'm the head of the RNC union is what I look like.
You look like me, I'd say.
I do. You have more hair.
It's a close run thing.
I look like a tiny Al Murray. And I can't smile, Clive, all the it's the face Nigel Farage makes when he holds in a thought. I'm joking, Nigel Farage exits everything.
So,
thanks for laughing.
Yeah. Chester, can I ask you a question?
Do it, Clive.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a huge fan. I'm glad you're still alive. It's great that you're here.
Some people are. Now, what you interview politicians.
So that's right. It's weird, isn't it?
And what, were you sensible politicians or just ones that want to goof around?
Are there sensible politicians? Which politicians are sensible? I've seen your politics is insane, and that's saying something worth on South Africa. Our politics is so insane, the lights turned off. Not even joking. I talked to Cyril Ramaphosa. I interviewed Richard Quest on CNN once. I interviewed all of our cabinet ministers, and they were related to me because they also thought that such is wild. It's amazing. I had cabinet ministers lining up to talk to me. I know that's weird, but I'm made out of latex. I'm kind of kinky. Who's your daddy? Jacob Zuma's my daddy. It's a South African joke.
Yeah, okay. We'll have to hope some South Africans are in.
Don't care. Go away. Are there any South Africans here? If there was, we'd wait outside and mug you afterwards. We'll buy a house in Joburg.
I've interviewed some South African politicians. F.W. de Klerk.
That's back in the day.
And Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
Love him. Named him twice. He's amazing.
Yeah. Okay, well, now you're both here. Let's get on with your wonders. I don't know if you decided these together.
No, he doesn't consult me because I'll make them rude.
Okay, so your first wonder is, well, it's a fact, really.
Let's do it.
A researcher at Columbia University calculated that during colonialism, the British took $45 trillion from just India, which is almost 17 times the UK's GDP. Now, this is today's figures? That's rounded up to...
As I know. I'm a tatat, so I don't do hard research. My hands don't work.
Yeah.
Google India. Isn't that amazing? That's a lot of what we do is talk about apartheid. And then this guy, he's a... what do you mean? Privilege.
It's the legacy of colonialism.
Yeah.
It's hard to point out, particularly, with white audiences, because it implies that we work less hard for what we've got. So it's hard to talk about it because people freak out, and we come from Africa, so most of the audiences are black, and now we're talking to white people of that race. And so, I mean, that fact's amazing because, the life expectancy in the UK, when white South Africa, this is worse, of course. Yeah. Most white South Africans are almost five times wealthier than black South Africans, etc. But in that situation, the life expectancy in the UK is, as Rathars are around 81, and in India it's about 69. So the legacy, I'm not saying it's entirely because of colonialism, but it is partly, that's why the word colonized starts with the word colon. Because our ancestors were assholes.
So, of course, the white South Africans are quite tribal, aren't they? So, are you an English South African?
Good question.
Afrikaans,
his name is Koch. Koch.
Okay.
How is that better? It's like his name's got COVID.
So my name's German,
right? Yeah.
German white South African. Yeah.
Okay.
No wonder your hand's in my ass. That's like racism squared.
But most of my family is Scottish, Blaloch, and Potter, and so Riddler, right. So very British. So I'm very much an English-speaking South African.
All right.
But
well done coming up with Scottish relations.
Thank you, Arthur Rudin, guys.
It's always a good idea.
He was a colonizer. Well done.
So it's cock to rhyme with loch.
That's it. Cock to rhyme with and cough. Cattiness of the throat infection. Okay.
All right. So this. How does this sort of stuff go down in South Africa when you're basically criticizing
the establishment,
privilege, all those things in a comedy show?
Well, part of it's because, you know, we're joking, which I think fun, and also we're not blaming you. It's not your fault. You didn't do it.
No, I didn't do it. I wasn't born.
You were there.
I have a perfect alibi.
Exactly. So it's more about just going, let's be fair, because what it does is it's, you got to go in your bag for this. I'm not going to go in my, no, guys, help me! Help me! He's doing it again, Clive! Feels like the 80s.
All right.
That was an apartheid joke. Went down well.
Well, you put him away well.
In his bag.
Yeah.
No, it goes, sorry, I'm now talking as the author, so I've got to two different people. No, people go with it. Well, I mean, part of it is, you know, there are a lot of people of color in the room, mm-hmm. and that's how assimilation works, is that when you see, oh, my black friend is laughing at this joke, obviously there's something for me to think about in it.
Yeah.
And I'm not feeling like I'm a bad person at all. I'm just sort of learning how this dynamic works. My wife is a person of color, and so I see dynamics in her. I mean, I've got a master's degree in this, but I see dynamics in her life that I never have to face.
Mm.
You know, most of the 6 out of 10 senior managers in South Africa are still white, so when apartheid ended, we didn't deal with it. I mean, people think, oh, you guys sorted that out, eh? No, we didn't sort it out. Because apartheid was a system of laws to economically benefit white people at black people's expense. So in other words, the reason most black South Africans are living on £2 a day or less is because we create, I think that's one of my seven wonders that I just dropped there.
Don't worry, we'll
go back to it.
It doesn't matter if we take them in a different order.
Yeah.
So, tell us what that is. The average South African lives on £2 a day.
I know, seven wonders aren't very jolly, are they?
Yeah, well, you made your choice.
I did, yeah. Well, as a career. That's why they say anthropology, the study of white guilt. It has the word apology in it. But no, Clive, the dynamic is that if you don't just go, hey, this is why we're here. This is why you say, yeah, my wife didn't get to study. She's a performer, an actor. She didn't get to study at the best university and so on because of her parents didn't have money at the time, yeah, in the early 90s, just the end of apartheid. So that has a knock-on effect in her whole life.
Sure.
A family that one has to look after. And if one doesn't acknowledge that, it's a bit of an a-hole move because you're kind of saying, I'm just better than you because I worked harder and I'm cleverer. You know, sort of Jacob Rees-Mogg. But you're not. You've got advantages. And if you just acknowledge that, it just makes you more pleasant as a human being. It's really, it's mostly that and reparations.
I get what you're saying there, but when apartheid came to an end, there were fears that absolute anarchy would break out or bloodshed. So on that level, it looks, and this is why Nelson Mandela is held in such high regard, because he managed sort of a transformation, was the head of it, and it was possible. So I know there's plenty of other problems that still exist, and there's been corruption, all sort of things like that. So I'm just putting the positive side that we
No, there is a part of I know, and that's what's difficult about this is we had a whole a narrative of reconciliation and what we called the Rainbow Nation.
Yeah.
The problem is that we have kids drowning in shit in schools.
Okay.
There's a toilet that's like a pit. And you know those, when you're camping, you got one of those camping things. Yeah. I know this is a really hectic thing to be telling you.
We go to Glastonbury for
exactly, that's to do the that joke very goes. Yeah. It's terrible. It's just, it goes, a hole with shit in it.
Yeah.
It's like Fife. And I know, I'm joking. I'm just joking. Yeah. You can mug him after the show.
Yeah.
And then... And only black kids go to these schools. And that's a direct legacy of what Cecil John Rhodes, the British colonialist, planned. Yeah. Of course, the apartheid government and the South African government today hasn't fixed it.
Yeah.
So you can't put all the blame on one place. But dealing with that, we have made a lot of progress. That is true, which is one of my seven wonders there. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go on to your second wonder, because it's a more positive wonder in this context.
Very jolly today.
You say South Africa has built more houses for homeless people than any country outside of China.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
A lot of us don't realize how many people don't have homes and then how much home building they did. A lot of it got lost in corruption money, because we do corruption like you guys do football, but
Oh, we can do both sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I've been watching.
So who gets the credit for that? Who's building all these?
The central government, or the ANC? So the government of Nelson Mandela and his legacy, and so on and so forth. Obviously, we're a bit like a one-party state, and we have one big party who, where the opposite is, like in South Africa, it's like the Labour government and the Tories are in one party, and then they fight each other within. So, but it's sort of the same. You've got a small group of people in Kent, apparently. That's what I've been told. Wealthy white guys who get to vote for who the next prime minister will be. Am I wrong? I don't know.
Your analysis is rough and ready, but at the moment, it's certainly we've had one party in power for quite a long time. But it looks as though there's never going to be another party in power in South Africa.
It is getting less and less. They're on 54% in the last elections, but the problem is they'll probably form, you know, coalition politics and so on.
Yeah. And you, I mean, you have a voice because you have two voices.
He's a voice.
Yeah. You have a voice because you're a comedian and you do TV programs and so forth. But is the white population really involved in politics anymore, or
It's a very insightful question in that, you know, what we do is what white South Africans can't do at the end of apartheid, and there are plenty of white South Africans who are trying to do right, and they're amazing people. It's not whitewashing everybody. But what happened at the end of apartheid is we kind of went, especially English-speaking white South Africans, it was all those Afrikaans people. They're bad.
Yes.
Like, there are Tories. They're bad. And then we're the nice ones, and now we just joined Elon Muskville, global whiteness, and we just moved on, you know, while black South Africans still carry the burden of the financial thing. So I think there are plenty of white South Africans doing amazing work in NGOs, in the political system in some way. We have a very white opposition party that's very small. It's very Tory, really, in their voice, but they're too small to really do anything. They govern where I'm from. But I mean, white South Africans are sort of struggling to find a way forward. Just probably why I made this show. Just as, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to fix a country, but if you want to find out, this is what it did without feeling all guilty and awkward. This is why apartheid is relevant and why we're still talking about it. I'm not saying it's on you, but at least know what happened, because no one did that, you know.
Okay. So, but anyway, the houses have got built. So
some of the houses, there's plenty of people without houses. Yeah.
So are there still those sort of townships with
tons and tons? Yeah. There's this place. I'm sorry to be such a downer for a comedian, but this is what I think about. And then I turn it into comedy, and then I have a fun show as well. But there's a place called Khayelitsha in Cape Town. You'll see it if you arrive in the airport, and you'll see the wonderful Table Mountain that you all know of. And Khayelitsha is just shacks, lots and lots of shacks. And Cape Town is built on the sands around Cape Town, if you're not on the mountain, are very much water-sogged. It's basically a big beach. These shacks have little buckets in them, and obviously it's only black people living in these shacks, and they expected to poo, the whole family, there'll be five people in one shack, that's their only toilet, and the government comes and picks up the buckets once a week or something. And then the other option is public toilets, which are like a concrete block with one big light overhead, because there's no electricity, it's all like jacked electricity, you know, because the electricity comes from a central place. And if you go to those toilets at night, you'll get raped. So that's apartheid. So that's apartheid not having been dealt with. So while they have done a lot, where unemployment's amongst young, I'm really giving you all the facts here, Clive, but the apartheid's amongst young South Africans, unemployment's at 57%.
Yeah. Some of that's improved since the end of apartheid.
There's a bigger black middle class, but it's also not moving to some degree. And part of it is that, you know, we literally forced people out of their homes and never gave them back, which is wild. And it's not like some people. There are people in my family who were forced out their homes and weren't given it back. You know, my wife's of color. So it's just like, imagine you got kicked out of your home and they're like, just get over it, man. It's fine. But it's my home.
Yes. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, the history of sort of empires and colonialism going back for thousands of years features this sort of
account. Terrible thing.
And if you I was talking about this the other day, if you related to in Scotland, there was a population in the Highlands of Scotland which were one way or another, you know, evicted or sent away to be replaced by a sheep walk.
Yeah.
And a lot of them went to Canada and America and were part of getting rid of the existing population, pushing them off their lands as well.
You relocated to relocate people. That's
people, I'm not sure they're people actually took on board the fact that they were was part of the same process.
Well, the commons system in the UK, where you know you had that shared land where people could farm on, and then they put up fences, and now people can't farm. I mean, it's the same kind of
enclosure.
Dynamic.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that you've mentioned the building homes for the homeless. You've also mentioned already the average South African lives on £2 a day.
I know. And I really sorry. I went all in. My, you know, I'm in Cape Town. I'm going. I'm going to come do my show on colonialism. And then I thought, and then I arrive at the room going, you guys are gonna, I'm making you depressed here. But well, there is a fact, £2.
But don't keep apologizing, but you were given the option of any wonder in the world.
I know, but this is what I'm talking about here at this show. So, you know, it's sort of an incredible fact that, like, how would you survive on £2? It makes it difficult to deal with, like, after process when Britain's having a cost of living crisis. And I understand you guys can't, your energy bills are ridiculous. Yeah. You know, grannies getting on buses so they can stay warm, you know, just really difficult dynamics. But we, you know, so when I heard we have a cost of living crisis, like South Africans are living £2 a day, I think your politicians don't have calculators. That's the start. And the other one that made me laugh is the heat wave from Africa. So your heat wave is and also, where was this fear of the heat when you colonized India for 200 years?
Well, you're right, especially on the weather front, because British weather is, in comparison to almost everywhere else, a rather mild thing, but we do go a bit crazy. If
London, I heard, was 38 or something. London 38 must be just terrifying.
It was melting. It was warm, I can tell you. Yeah. But it's not having water. But even for a few days or a few weeks, if you're used to a regular water supply, you notice it. Plus, in the winter in London, if there's a sort of a suggestion of snow, everything comes
shuts
then.
Down.
But to find Edinburgh so hot as well has been, in one respect, fantastic. But you can't even enjoy a hot weather day now, because you're thinking, "Well, it's a lovely hot weather day, but is this mean global warming is about to destroy
die?"
Everything?
Yeah.
But anyway, we do like to moan about the weather. We like to talk about the weather, and we certainly moan about it when it's extreme.
Yeah. We almost ran out of water. The whole city of Cape Town almost ran out of water a few years ago. It was going to be called Day Zero, and the clock was ticking, and you check the dam each day, and it was bananas. People were like gathered, fighting over this public streams where you could fill up tanks, and it was pretty wild.
So is your advice to us to stop whinging about our cost of living crisis, our drought?
No, I wouldn't presume to have advice for you. I just know that if you're running out of water, you guys have to also put in a bucket. And
Well, we had this, I think the last really bad was 1976, wasn't it? Was that the last really bad time we had? Are you all too young to remember 1976?
Did you run out of water before? Has it ever got bad before?
Well, it was. There are things called standpipes in the streets that were there when things are bad. They can't get to your house, but you can go and get a bucket of water from there. We had that for a few days, and then there was a minister for drought, and he made it rain.
Oh my goodness.
He made it rain. It was
That's
fantastic.
Amazing.
Yeah,
we have a rain queen. Yeah. She wasn't doing her job for a while.
Yeah.
the joke that was going around was people delaying getting pregnant because they're scared that when their water broke, someone would use it to flush.
Jolly good. Now, okay, so we've covered, I think,
everything
on £2
a
day. I'm not sure how. I mean, prices must be a bit lower or something. To live on £2 a day
Of course, it's not the same environment. Yeah.
All right. Now, a slightly more optimistic note.
Yeah.
Perhaps. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Villa Casey Street in Soweto was the home of two Nobel Prize winners.
Yeah, Villa Casey, yeah. It's Desmond Tutu, Nelson Mandela.
I think we'd moved on from,
buckets
and outdoor lavatories, but anyway, Villa Casey Street.
A weird sort of enunciations that we all do. And I have to say, when I come here, I keep saying names. I must be saying this wrong. Or the amount of people who call it Edinburgh. And have you never been here? Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu lived on the same street. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, right.
It's crazy. Yeah,
is it a small street? So
it's quite a long street. There's lots of it's sort of like your Royal Mile of Soweto. It's like where all the restaurants are.
But right.
Wow, what a revel. Like you walk down the street and you immediately, Amandla.
So was that, did Mandela live there before his
arrest? Yeah, definitely. When he came out, he was in fancy billionaire kind of homes and stuff. Yeah, he wasn't going to Villa Casey. So he went there for drinks, I'm sure. But this was probably mid-60s. Yeah, very different Villa Casey streets.
But this is like before your time, isn't it? I don't know how old. How old are you?
I know, I use a lot of Botox.
Yeah, okay.
I'm 68.
No, you're not.
Okay, 63.
You're 28. So, I mean, do you remember the time before Nelson Mandela and the apartheid?
Oh, it's in the show. Yeah. I made it nice and awkward and tell the time, the day I remember realizing I was in apartheid. It was a wild day. Sort of my mother, because the thing about growing up in a human rights crime against humanity, like, you don't arrive and they go, okay, this is a crime against humanity. It's ridiculous. And so you kind of like, it's normalized, this kind of prejudice. You only see white people, it looks like Canada, and then the Canadians, I love you guys. And then my mother said to me, I was 6 years old, so mid-80s, and my mother said to me, so I'm not 63, so my mother said to me, literally her words were, Conrad, thank your lucky stars, you weren't born black in South Africa, which is, of course, a pretty wild thing to say.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is, like, dude, you got it lucky.
Yeah, sure.
Obviously. And that was a profound moment for me. I mean, I didn't realize, only years later realized, wow, that what that meant and what that said and the narrative that created.
But I mean, parents the world over will say to their children if they're doing something or they're not eating their food up or something. There are children starving in Africa or starving in China.
Well, we did that here too. This was so crazy. I didn't put this in the show, but I wanted to. It's like, we still did that. Oh, no, there are kids starving in Ethiopia. It's like, I live in Cape Town. They're down the road.
So were your parents sort of anxious, liberal-minded people who were worried about this, or were they much more part of the system?
They were in the middle. My mother was very aware of the system and disagreed with it. She wasn't an activist by any means. She was like a sort of middle of the road liberal democrat, not a liberal, I'd say a Labour. She was Labour, but she'd be like a more Keir Starmer's Labour than Jeremy Corbyn's Labour,
right?
And my dad would probably a Lib Dem. Like, I asked my dad the other day, like, because my dad is very clear. He's an actuary, and he's a liberal guy, but he wasn't in the struggle sort of thing. I mean, the only reason I'm like this because I met anti-apartheid activists and I sort of realized what was going on around me. But he asked me, Conrad, what's going on in South Africa? He doesn't talk like that, but it's funny if I make him sound like he's just come from a South African party. But he asked, what's going on in South Africa? And it's because we had a lot of, obviously, lockdown messed all of our politics up. So, and South Africa's lockdown was bananas. So if you jogged outside during lockdown, they'd punish you because you couldn't jog at all. You couldn't go exercise outside.
No.
And if they caught you doing it, they punished you by making you exercise. It's weird.
Yeah.
Weird dynamic. But so he asked, what's going on in South Africa? I said, well, Dad, do you have any black friends? I mean, he's 76 years old, 76 years in Africa. He said, no, he's never had a black friend. Yeah. 76 years in Africa, not one black friend. That's like walking up the Royal Mile and not getting a single flyer. It's undoable. And so I said, well, then how do you know what's going on in South Africa? And I talk to you. I'm my dad's black friend. And sort of the counterpart, part of the conversation that happens, I don't always put it in, but in the show I'm doing now, is be your dad whoever's black friend until they get a real one. So in other words, if they're a bit prejudiced, like hey, that was a bit weird.
But your father now has a black daughter-in-law.
She does. Yeah, he does.
And has that opened his eyes, or has it caused tension?
He does. Yeah. No, not at all. No. He wasn't that kind of. He's like, that's what liberal racism is. He's very intellectual as well, so he understands the concepts, and he did all his own reading once I started explaining things to him. But no, if you in a mixed race relationship, and this the same will happen if any of you are in mixed race relationships, is there's always weird vibes that happen every now and again, and you got to deal with that. It's always like someone said, "Oh, I'm not racist, but you speak so well, you're one of the good ones." All that weird crap we say.
Yes,
I'm not racist, but how does that work? Like, you can't say to your wife, "Honey, I would never sleep with your sister." But
I'm not racist, but it's always followed by something, just a hint
weird
of racism. All right, so the two of them lived in that street, perhaps at different times, and have you
I believe they lived there at the same time for a period.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
60s it would have been. Proper struggle days, proper crazy stories, running around, hiding and Wearing disguises, and the stories, if you hang out with struggle heroes, which I have done quite a bit of, is amazing, just really amazing lives.
It's always great having boasts about the Nobel Peace Prize. Trinity College Cambridge used to always boast that they had more Nobel Prizes than France, and wow. I think it sometimes is true. And
that's amazing, but it is France. So.
Anyway, so that's the two of them. And would you or your puppet have interviewed either of them, or was that?
They got a bit old, but before I was on TV. Yeah. So I did shows with them in the audience, so I met them at things.
Yes.
But proper interview, no. I sort of Ramaphosa down de Klerk, I managed to interview.
Because Desmond Tutu would have loved it.
He would have been great. Yeah. He had that. Yeah. He was such a great comedy. He just had such a great comedy angle. The Desmond Tutu joke quote is, of course, Anglican Church was involved in, slightly more progressive church after we, because the church is so involved in colonialism. This is a weird story, we love you, and then, because that's explaining the joke, is that colonialism involve missionaries. So soldiers arrive and then kill everyone. Yeah. And then you'd go you got a soft power that would go to the chief's brother, who's never going to become a chief. So he needs some kind of power. He needs angles. So the missionary go, come be our friend, because then you've got the power of Western support and you have a bit of influence in the village, right? So that's kind of, missionaries were involved in the soft power kind of colonialism. Okay, right. So, and it's sort of ironic because they were like, love thy neighbors, what they were saying, and then they'd steal the land. So it's like the Tinder swindlers of history. And so Desmond Tutu's joke is when the British arrived, or white people arrived, we had the land and you had the Bible, and then we closed our eyes to pray and we opened our eyes, you had the land and we had the Bible.
Yes. I interviewed once on telly, and I had a sort of strange combination of guests. On the particular show, there was a music star called Boy George.
Of course, amazing
culture. You remember Boy George? And you think, I don't know if they're going to get on. They were on separately in the program where they were in the green. They got on famously.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
They were wearing similar outfits as it happened, but that was the only tension between them. But they both loved each other. And
humour is an amazing part of South Africa's story, is that we go through crazy things, but we can read it off.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, your fifth wonder, it takes us back to your puppet, Chester Missing, because your wonder is, my puppet, Chester Missing, has gone to court, written a book, and is famous all on his own. It's very strange.
It is very strange.
So let's start.
It's my next wonder about the court case. Did you say that now?
Yeah, it's in court. It has gone to court.
So
what did he? How did the puppet
wild,
go to court?
It's a wild story. I'll get him out to explain.
Okay.
It.
All right. Come. Yeah.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Now you want me back.
Okay.
Hello. None of you phoned anyone. You just sat there and watched.
Yeah.
Next he's going to send me to Rwanda. Awkward.
So tell the story. We went to court with a very famous musician in South Africa who's very racist.
So what was the court case? Was it him suing you for...
It wasn't actually suing. No. What happened is he tweeted. He said he blamed...
black South Africans for apartheid. So he said, he literally, his words here, night looks, blacks are the architects of the apartheid, which is a terrible thing to say, of course.
That must come within the category of victim blaming, mustn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of full-blown apartheid and our victim blaming type things. Yeah, so I tweeted in that. That is because you haven't graduated enough books that you color in. And that's, then we went to a whole campaign asking corporate sponsors of shows he was doing, like, do you endorse these words? Because, you know, if you have someone who you with you that you, you know, if you have someone on your stage that you're paying for and they've done something crazy. So we just went and said, oh, do you support this stuff? And then he started losing sponsorship for gigs and so on. Sort of like a cancelling thing, sort of a complicated dynamic. And so he went and got a later harassment charge with a police station saying, I'm being harassed because this guy's taking us on, even though, you know, he's, you know, he says crazy things all the time, this guy. So it's not like he's not used to this dynamic. Yeah. And so he laid this charge, and the police, there was a young magistrate who approved it. And so for 2 weeks, so it's actually a harassment charge, not a suing. And so for 2 weeks, it was illegal for either of us, him as well, because I said it on Twitter, so I was literally in the court titus, I know.
So it was like an injunction to say,
it was like an injunction.
Or cease and desist, they might call it in America.
If I said his name, I'd go to, if I said this guy's name, he would go to jail. Do you guys know the Lord Voldemort? It was like that. The name you cannot say. Even so, right now. And then people like, you know, think I was just in court, but he was there.
Yeah.
The judge said, please rise. I was like, hello. So we're the second puppet in history to go to court.
Oh, right.
Who's the first one? Boris Johnson. I love you, Clive. You're going back. No! Guys, you need just being okay with this. I think you should go in your bag.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, it's, there's a virus out there, guys. We can't take any chances.
Yeah.
It looks like a condom. It doesn't. I already look
what
like
size?
A penis. My size. Clive! I don't believe you guys. Help!
Guys, that's
so creepy, isn't it?
That's, it's a quite disturbing. He's got a, I can say this, but he's not. He's got a, quite a big head for a ventriloquist.
Enormous head.
Yeah. What enormous happened there?
Head. Yeah, I want him to look like a vinyl toy. If you know vinyl toys, they're sort of those like graffiti looking toys.
Yeah.
But it's a similar style to graffiti, simply drawn and so on. And yeah. So I got him designed looking like a sort of interesting, quirky.
Right. Okay.
So that's why his head's so big. And also bigger than mouth. Be easier for you to just forget that I exist. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So he, so you and he were in court or going to court to, and you won in the end. So you.
It was very strange. Yeah. I mean, we were literally there and couldn't say any of the names of the people associated with this guy. And I had journalists come to see shows of mine to see if I said his name, and so on. and then yeah, they was very. I mean, he sent this moron to handle his case, and that was my lawyers. I got lawyers who supported me, of course, because it was a ridiculous situation. And they were helping his lawyer out because his lawyer was so bad at it. And then,
but he's a big star. This guy
very famous. Yeah, very, very famous. And so there was a lot of blowback, of course. So I don't in South Africa's space, I don't talk about it a lot. I mean, his fans are unlikely to listen to your podcast with love, Clive.
Well, I don't know.
It's got a racist musician market.
I don't position myself. I'm years and years of being BBC neutrality.
Yes, exactly.
We appeal to all people
these
with
guys,
all their prejudices.
All their, of course, everyone's welcome at the BBC.
In theory.
And what's funny is at the end, so now at the, when we won, I could now say the names. I could talk to the people around him, and his lawyer was one of the people I couldn't talk to. So I was stopped from speaking, not just to him, to anyone around him.
Right.
So I waited as this guy left the court, and then Chester was there going, why are you supporting racism, guy? That's not cool. And then he got upset, so he tried to attack me.
Yes.
Physically. But he was trying to pull Chester out of the way, but he doesn't understand that a TV shot looks like that.
Yeah.
So in a shot, if you reach your hand in and grab the puppet, it looks like you're mugging the puppet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a picture video of this guy assaulting a puppet.
All right. So now, where are we? Where are both of you? Is his career carrying on more or less regardless?
Fine. He's doing absolutely fine.
And did it help your career? Did you become even more famous?
Yes, even more. That's why fighting racism is very profitable. In all seriousness, the blowback is enormous when you take on kind of the establishments, because, you know, my street address got put online with threats. My wife got phone threatened. My wife's very cautious about mentioning my name to like a right wing type of white South Africans who are often involved in the work she does, because they know, you know, this saying this kind of stuff's pretty, it's out there. So there is a kind of level at which I lose corporate work and I'm unlikely to get ads. I do a lot of corporate. All your money in South Africa as a comedian is made out of doing bank gigs and Vodacom. And
all right.
There's some theatre, but it's mainly corporate gigs. So, I mean, there was a cost, and yes, there was lots of media. So I'm sort of cautious about how I do it. I wouldn't do it today because of the privilege that comes from talking about.
Okay.
You benefited from apartheid and you benefited from that, so now you're benefiting twice. This is weird.
Okay, so that was going to court, but Chester has also written a book.
He did Yarn Politics. He's interviewed everyone, so it was on South African politics. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
And he's basically more recognized than you are.
Basically.
Yeah.
I give you the numbers. So he's got about 400,000 Twitter followers.
Yeah.
I have 15,000 Twitter followers.
Okay.
His career is going much better than mine.
And
I've checked into hotel rooms under his name.
Yeah. You can upgrade in his name.
I've had insane stories. So I arrive at the hotel. I say, it's Conrad Koch. It's me, Conrad. Mm. And they go, sir, there's no Conrad Koch here. Mm. Chester missing? Yeah, he's here. He's me. Can you prove it? He doesn't have an ID book.
I think it's down to your management or whoever.
Oh, I have to chat to someone. It's normally the company. Yeah. And there's just, I can go on and on about getting off traffic fines because the police, my management, we had one set of managers, the cops, our cops can be quite corrupt sometimes. And the cop, this guy who's managing all my gigs for a while, he says, show them Chester. I was like, I can't do that. Show them Chester. And you take out Chester and the cops. No, Chester can go.
well done. Done, Chester.
Corrupt puppets.
We're going to go on to your sixth wonder now, which brings us closer to here. In fact, right here, your sixth wonder is the Edinburgh Festival. This thing is amazing. It's been a goal for years. So as we mentioned earlier on, this is the first time you've been to the Edinburgh Festival, but you've been to lots of other festivals and centres of
Canada, Just for Laughs, all the Canadian Fringe festivals, some Australian festivals and so on. The problem with coming to the UK is that, you know, I have to translate what means something to you. The jokes about, say, if I'm talking about your politics, I don't know what Liz Truss, who is funnier? Chester goes, he's making me talk. I'm Liz Truss and you're Boris Johnson.
Yes.
Or is it, it's like I'm Nadine Dorries and you're Boris Johnson. Which one's a funnier joke? I don't know until I have some time here. So I had to kind of tour Canada and Australia to get it right. And I did shows in a place in Canada called Regina.
Yeah.
Which sounds rude, doesn't it? Yeah. This is my Regina. And the sports team in Regina is called the Rough Riders. That's the...
Yes. Yeah.
Which is a condom brand in South Africa.
Oh, so you need some expat South Africans in the audience.
You can just say it.
But Montreal, if you just for laughs, that's a big sort of international, specifically comedy festival, kind of built around American television interest as well. So
it's just not
it's
as
more of a
awesome.
Business oriented.
It's a business oriented thing, and it's very high brandy. We're here to book you, and so you don't do as interesting stuff. It's very very polished club sets versus you'll see the amazing things that you have here. I saw a show called Boris Live at 5, I think. Boris Johnson Live, amazing. This guy came out as Boris for an hour and had sex in the back. Didn't know how many kids he had. It was an education.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he's got to make hay while the sun is just about shining.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody who
out.
Looks like Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
Maybe next year
Short
there's going
job.
To be not much of a market in
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
So when you start attacking politicians, you don't want to attack them too much.
Yes.
If you want them
go.
To hang
I mean,
on.
What
you
are you
going to
do?
On.
Yeah. That's the absolute. Well, if you do political satire like I do, that's your jokes die pretty fast. Yeah. I didn't understand. Boris, he said, I'm leaving. And then he stayed. And I don't know. That was very strange. Well, like he did his own Brexit.
It's been a very slow move. It's the for some reason political parties, instead of just voting, the members of parliament could just vote for their leader. They could do it in 2 days. They've introduced a system where they have to have other people.
That's what happens in South Africa.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe it's a worldwide phenomenon. To my mind, it's ridiculous. It's the so leader strange. Is to lead in parliament. Why
strange.
Can't they? They should.
Very strange. Like letting someone you've kicked out stay in the house. They're going to break all your stuff.
Well, somebody's got to stay and yeah, no, they could have put a caretaker yeah. prime minister, yeah. which, yeah. but I think he wanted to have his wedding in Chequers or something. I don't know. and, you know.
That was wild. Yeah. That's wild.
So we'll get back to that in a minute. So it was Montreal. It's just in my mind, Montreal, just for last, because Jerry Sadovich, who's been cancelled here, he had a big incident there when I was actually filming it for Channel 4, because he made some quite controversial jokes and somebody came out of the audience and hit him.
Oh, great.
And because it's comedy,
early Will Smith,
people, you know, but even it's very similar to Will Smith, but in that moment it's this comedy show and he rants on a lot and somebody can't, and in that moment nobody does anything. You think, oh, is this for real or is this or is it for laughs?
Part of the show.
Because it's could believable. Easily be. And yeah. then there's a huge furore and
that's hilarious. That festival's amazing. It's a learning experience, but this festival is incredible. I mean, it really is the. I mean, you know, it's the best arts festival on earth, and it's amazing to see all this, the amazing work, and also to go, where's the edge of the conversation on in sort of comedy?
Well, I'm assuming everyone in the audience likes it because they're here at a show at the festival, and you, I'm glad to hear you're liking it. I don't want to dwell too much on this, because we're running out of time, and I've done lots of these My Seven Wonders now, and very few overlaps of the wonders when I was doing them online, and very few other than almost everybody here picks on The Fringe, the festival, or Edinburgh as one of their wonders, which I think is a...
Did everyone do that? Oh, wow.
No, not everybody, but this is the only overlap we have. So that's... but is it something that when you first, you know, I don't know, walked along the Royal Mile or first were walking towards your venue, were you overwhelmed by it to think, well, this is ridiculous. There's so many shows on. How's anybody even going to find me?
Well, I was very cautious about it. So I came to the festival a few times, saw it, did some smaller open mics to kind of just get a feel for it.
Yeah.
And then managed to get amazing management here with Mick Perrin Worldwide, who are very good at, who obviously were the first ones being Trevor Noah here, my friend Louis Segola. So they have a sort of understanding of African acts and our unique hurdles that we have bringing our content to a kind of more Western environment.
Okay.
So I felt very confident of that. The only thing I wasn't sure of is that do I go the more crazy route? I have a very like a Jeff Dunham-y style, but like a left-leaning fun, you know, a puppet made out of feather dusters and a slipper that's an ostrich. I turn a guy in the audience into a person in the audience into a lion with a lion mask. You know those ventriloquist masks, but I have a lion and then he hunts people in the audience.
Right.
I'm hungry. Tons of fun. And then I do this much more hard-hitting political style, which is kind of unique. There's not a lot of ventriloquists to do it. And I live in an environment where you can take the conversation on race and colonialism quite far, and having a master's in anthropology, so that I know some of the things that need to be said. Mm-hmm. So I thought bring the more crazy shows. So the only thing, I wasn't worried about the number of shows. There's plenty of people coming. My show was sold out and so on. So it's more about... just finding a way, because this show is like a gym for comedians. We all get on stage and now we're okay. This audience, I had a sheep farmer from Yorkshire in my show the other night.
Yes.
I know that because I made him talk at the end of the show.
All right. Well, they're usually cheery people.
Oh, they're
sheep
very cheery.
From Yorkshire. Absolutely.
This guy was wonderful. Yeah. No, this guy was absolutely delightful. But I was explaining colonialism to him. So it's sort of like a complex kind of situation. It's like, guys, how much has this guy ever seen anyone talk about this stuff? Mm-hmm. I'm sure sheep farmers from Yorkshire, very revolutionary people, but I wouldn't put them at the top of the list if I was guessing, but I'm not from here.
Well, they certainly would have heard of colonialism, I would have thought, but
all
I'm saying, they might not necessarily be the most enthusiastic comedy audiences. I don't know.
Don't be rude about that.
I know, I certainly not.
There could be a sheep farmer from Yorkshire here. Really sorry.
All right, we've got one more wonder to go, and your last wonder is, again, I've got to check the pronunciation as I go, but our dog, how do you pronounce his name?
Mogwai.
Mogwai. He's 17 years old. He's blind and deaf, but keeps on going.
He's amazing.
Yes.
I love him. Is anyone here have an old dog who can't see? They're amazing, yeah. Aren't they? They're like one of those Roomba vacuum cleaners.
Yes.
He just goes and yeah. hits a corner. And people, yeah. oh, shame. Poor little guy. No, he's fighting.
Well, I...
And it's Mogwai. Yeah. Comes from, if you've seen the Gremlins... you guys remember the Gremlins movie from the 80s? And then there's a little cute creature, and then if it goes in the water or eats after 12 at night, it becomes a monster.
Yeah.
The cute thing's called a Mogwai.
All right. So what type of dog is he?
He's a Maltese poodle.
A Maltese poodle?
You know those little white fluffy ones? Yeah.
So what do you call them a moodle these days?
Or I probably. But yeah. We
so he's a cross between a Maltese terrier and a poodle?
He's a cross between, say, he is a bit of a cross, but we don't know. I think he might, there's some Jack Russell, you know.
Yeah.
He's one of those dogs that you got from your neighbor type of dog.
Okay, all right, yeah.
And he's delightful. He's tons of fun, you know.
But that's a good age, 17.
Yeah, I know, he keeps going. Yeah. It's exhausting.
I had a dog until last summer. He was 16 and a half or thereabouts. He was a bit of a mixture.
Could he still see in here?
Well, no. I got him from a TV program, actually. It's called The Underdog Show, and it was like a sort of reality program. You got a dog to train, and then you got eliminated week by week. Anyway, he was with us for a long while, and he was he was blind and deaf by the end. And we have a little pond in our garden, and I was there at one point, and I could just hear him splashing around. He'd gone and walked into the pond. It wasn't a deep pond, but you know how dogs are. He was just keeping trying to walk out of it, and I put all things around it and dried him off. And you know, dog with pond water on him isn't fantastic. And then a few weeks later, he did it again.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, come on, Albert, you know, you must have learnt this is where the pond is.
Yeah,
but I thought he was deaf, but he. Sorry, this is a bit. This is not.
No, no, it's amazing.
For my story, but he was on his last legs, really, and I went to see.
Could you call him? Could you whistle and he'd look up?
No, but then he wasn't over keen on being called, even when he was. he came if he wanted to. He was a very food oriented. So if you had food, he'd come, and if he didn't, he didn't. So I had a conversation with a vet, and we decided. Well, he wasn't collapsing. He wasn't soiling himself. He wasn't whimpering. He wasn't in pain. So let's keep him going.
Yeah.
But I think he heard all that because he decided. He'd had enough. So overnight, he did all those things
backstab
for the first time. So that was it. But anyway, so I'm so Mogwai is in South Africa, is he?
Yes, no, I kept him in my suitcase and I bought him.
No, I'm just checking. I'm just asking. So,
he's Cape Town, being my wife. My wife is in Cape Town with my wife, and we've just moved, which is I feel sorry for him a bit because you know when they're blind, they get used to the paths. They get okay, I'm here, and they can sense. He can hear enough that he
smell
can get a sense.
Yeah,
so he does now. He keeps getting. I mean, it's hilarious because he stands in like a weird corner and stuff, and then where did the bathroom go?
Yes. Never mind. It'll be here.
That's basically what's happening.
Yes.
And I'm at the Edinburgh Festival, so you can imagine.
So are you worried, you're going to get back to him soon, you know, in case the worst happens?
I am honestly worried about that, Joe, because I have had a dog get sick while I was away. It's a Perth Fringe once, and it's really hard. You know, you worry about them. It's a guy, you know?
Yeah.
But he's a proper trooper, so I doubt he'll go. He's probably lived to 25 or something ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, I think 17 is probably getting to the upper limit. But
the use-by date has definitely been passed.
I had a dog before this one who was a feisty dog, West Highland White. And
I know this.
When we had to go and see the vet, and the guy, you know, the vet said, well, you know, I'm going to give a little injection to sedate him and then another one to polish him off. And I said, well, okay, be careful.
Yeah.
Because he's always been a feisty dog.
Yeah.
Anyway, the little injection to sedate him was just enough to spark him back into life. And he bit the vet. I should have told him off for that.
That's a way to go.
But I couldn't help joking. Yes, okay. So we've come really to the end of your wonders. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks.
And to explain.
Thanks for listening.
I have to choose the wonder of wonders from your list of seven. The one which struck me as particularly wonderful as described in this podcast. So I've got to find the list of wonders again and make my decision. I enjoyed, I was moved by your talking about your dog. As you can see, I'm a dog owner. But I think of all the things that You've mentioned that's the most wonderful and a bit more joyous than some of the others. I think I'll go with this Villa Kazi Street in Soweto being the home of two Nobel Peace Prize winners.
Mandler.
So thank you very much. Konrad Koch.
If you enjoyed this episode of My Seven Wonders, it would be wonderful if you could rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you found us. Thank you for listening.
My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson is a Stack production in association with Alaska TV and powered by the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.